I'm Kathleen Dunn. This hour, we all talk about how expensive health care is in the United States. And yet, a recent study by the National Academy of Medicine has estimated that the U.S. healthcare system squandered $765 billion a year, more than what the insurance coverage could have been for 150 million more American workers. Our guest this hour has written a couple very extraordinary pieces for ProPublica, and it's a story that has been, I think, underreported. If we want healthcare costs to go down in this country, why don't we look at what we waste? We throw away so much. And the other part of the story is other people certainly could use it. This is so far a two-part series, What Hospitals Waste. The nation's healthcare tab is sky high. ProPublica was tracking down the reasons. First stop, a look at the perfectly good stuff that hospitals throw away. And the second part, America's other drug problem. Every year, nursing homes nationwide flush, burn, or throw out tons of valuable prescription drugs. Iowa collects them and gives them to needy patients for free. Most other states don't. So we're going to talk about these important articles this hour of the program. Marshall Allen is our guest. Marshall covers patient safety for ProPublica. He's one of the creators of the ProPublica Surgeon Scorecard, which we talked to him about some time ago. It published the complication rates for about 17,000 surgeons who perform 8 common elective procedures. He also moderates the ProPublica Patient Safety Facebook group. And we'll be welcoming phone calls. I would imagine we'll have a lot of people responding to these stories. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show. Twitter is at K Dunn Show. And as you know, ProPublica has won tons of Pulitzer Prizes for all the work that they have done. Marshall, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me here, Kathleen.
Thank you. What great articles these are. Almost one quarter of American health care dollars we just throw away. That is phenomenal.
Well, it is outrageous, and it's not the kind of thing that most of us could ever tolerate in our own budgets. But the thing I'm trying to connect here is the connection between our rising healthcare costs and the amount that's being wasted. And if about a fourth to a third of all the money spent on healthcare is, in some cases, going down the drain, then it seems like if they could save some of that money and if they could be a little more efficient mm-hmm. with what's being wasted, theoretically at least, it could bring down the cost of care for all of us. And I think right now we have a lot of debating going on in Washington, D.C. about getting coverage for health care, but there's been very little done in a meaningful way to reduce the cost of health care.
Well, let's go to Portland, Maine. You take us there in one of your stories into this huge warehouse that is packed with what?
Well, it's packed with things that have been discarded by hospitals. And I had heard about this warehouse, and there's a kind of collection of these nonprofit organizations that are gathering the things that are thrown away by hospitals around the country. And in many cases, they're donating them, putting them in shipping containers and sending them overseas to places like Bangladesh or Uganda or India. And it's really wonderful that they're being donated, but what I wanted to look at is what is being thrown away by our hospitals. So this warehouse up in Portland, Maine is about 15,000 square feet. It's an organization called Partners for World Health that runs the warehouse, and they collect used but still good medical equipment, and then they collect medical supplies. And so this is things like gloves and masks and bandages and surgical sutures and all kinds of things, catheters, nasal cannulas, ventilators, all types of equipment. And most of the equipment, or much of it, was brand new in its original packaging, unexpired. It wasn't used. It wasn't the kind of stuff that, seemed like it should be discarded. I mean, much of it was brand new.
Mm-hmm. And so why is that the case? Do surgeons ask for all kinds of supplies they don't need in an operating room and then they just get discarded for some reason? How can you answer
that? Well, that is what happened at the University of California, San Francisco. So they did a study at UCSF Medical Center where they looked at the number of supplies used in neurosurgery that did not actually get used during the procedure. So they would lay them out at the beginning of the operation. They would introduce these things into the sterile field of the operating room, and then they wouldn't end up using them. And so these tools, which are very expensive, were not used for the surgery at all, and then they had to be discarded. And so they counted all the stuff they were throwing away in these neurosurgery cases. And just for neurosurgery at that hospital, they estimated they wasted about $2.9 million over the course of a year.
And nobody is keeping track of that? Nobody. There has to be some people in the hospital, and there are, because some people who were nurses did something else to do something else with the waste. But aren't there people who say, oh, my gosh, We have all of this stuff that's left over that can be used by somebody else. Somebody with a conscience must think, I can't throw this out.
You know, I think everybody has a conscience about it, and everybody knows that it's wrong. And it's really interesting because when you start asking these questions of people within the hospitals, there is a sense of shame that people feel because they know that a lot is being thrown away that could be reused or could be used at all. In fact, a lot of the things are discarded. Like one thing that I was surprised by up in that warehouse in Maine, it's a 15,000 square foot warehouse. It's the size of a good size, say, a middle school gymnasium.
Goodness.
And I mean, this warehouse is packed with stuff. I mean, almost floor to ceiling in some parts. And one of the things I saw in there was a pallet with boxes and boxes of surgical sutures. Now, these sutures are small little needles that used to sew up patients during an operation.
Yes.
And they cost hundreds of dollars per box. And when I asked one of the hospitals why they had donated these sutures, they said that they had taken over the clinic of another doctor, and that doctor used a brand of sutures that they didn't use in their hospital, and so that's why they got discarded. In other cases, a hospital will switch vendors, and so they may get all of their saline solution from one vendor, they switch to another vendor, and instead of using up the stuff, the old stuff, the new vendor will give them credit on the old material so that they can switch immediately to start with the new vendor. So kind of in our house, you know, if we switched brands of toilet paper or something, we would use up the old toilet paper before we got the new ones. In hospitals and the way the supply chain works, it often just gets discarded.
Mm-hmm. And when you talk about this Partners for World Health, when you look at the stuff that's being sent to them all over the world, are there organizations in every state in the country that's looking at these unused supplies, gathering them in their own warehouses from Maine to California to make use of all of that? Or is it just sporadically here and there?
It's
willy-nilly?
Very sporadic.
It's
very sporadic. It's kind of a lot of mom and pop organizations who kind of, you know, really have a heart to not see this stuff thrown away because most of it ends up in a landfill.
Mm.
So they're probably capturing very little of it. Again, it's hard to know how much is being captured because if a hospital keeps track of it individually, and there's probably a lot of variation there, how many do keep track of it, everything is so fragmented in healthcare, so we don't really know collectively how much is being lost.
You also talk about another organization, a Georgia-based nonprofit, MedShare, that is giving discarded medical supplies to developing countries last year. Tell me about their operation.
Well, so MedShare is one of the bigger ones. So they're probably, I think they were about 10 times the one up in Maine that I saw. And I visited their facility in New Jersey, and they also were doing a very similar thing where they gather things that are discarded from hospitals. A lot of the stuff they get is directly from the manufacturers as well, and then they're shipping it overseas to needy countries. In some cases, these things are being used in the United States. Like I called the Rural Hospital Association, and they said, you know, a lot of rural hospitals are being closed right now because of just they can't make ends meet. And there's a lot of this stuff that they could really use. And some of the organizations are using some of the things in the United States, but often that's not the case.
And what would it take, maybe the publication of a ProPublica article like yours and a few others, what would it take for hospitals to look at wasteful discarding of things that were needed by others?
Well, for one thing, it's expensive for hospitals to throw things away because often they have to pay to have them discarded. They have to pay to have them shipped away. They have to pay to have them taken to a landfill. And so if there was sort of a central repository, you know, an organization that could manage these things and inventory these things and then kind of match people up with what they need, then rural hospitals, you know, when I talked to the Rural Hospital Association, they said they would love to be informed about what's out there, even the equipment, you know. So the equipment is, you know, ultrasound machines, incubators, very high-end stuff, some of it worth $25,000.
Wow.
But a hospital will be upgrading their equipment, you know, so it's used, but it's still in good condition. And so the rural hospitals were saying if they knew what was available and somebody could kind of organize it in a way that could then communicate the what's available to them, then they might be able to actually, you know, tap into that resource.
So who should organize it?
Well, I don't know. You know, I mean, I think that's part of the problem in healthcare in the United States in general. Everything is fragmented, and everybody's kind of siloed, doing their own thing. And so collectively, there's no one who really has this responsibility to organize such a thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's move on. We'll get back to hospitals in a moment, but let's move on to drugs. 740 tons of drugs are wasted by nursing homes each year.
Yeah, so this story, my goal with each of these stories, you know, I was really inspired by that national, I guess it's the Institute of Medicine is the old name of the organization that did this study that found that $765 billion a year is wasted in healthcare spending. That report came out in 2012, and it's kind of been on my mind ever since it came out. Mm. So with each of these stories, what I'm really trying to do is I want to find the most outrageous examples of waste that are out there. And I'm counting on people who are in the industry to kind of point me in the right direction. And one thing I would, you know, ask your listeners to do, if they're out there and they know what kinds of wasted spending there is in healthcare, there's a little tab on each of these stories that says, help us investigate wasted healthcare dollars. And so people can write me, and I look at all of these, and I'm pursuing a lot of the tips I get. I've gotten a couple hundred of them so far, and some really amazing examples. So this next story was about the drugs, again, perfectly good, unexpired drugs in nursing homes that get flushed down the toilet, thrown into landfills, or burned up in incinerators every year. It's really, it's estimated to be hundreds of millions of dollars in drugs that are just being thrown away in the United States every year.
And you look at how much some of those drugs cost, cancer drugs particularly, you mentioned, that other people, and there's nothing wrong with some of these drugs, that people can't afford to buy.
Right, that's right. So there's nothing wrong with the drugs. I mean, basically, this is an outcome of the way nursing home prescribing works. So a nursing home resident, a typical nursing home resident, may be on 6 to 8 medications. And nursing homes don't have their own pharmacies. And so what they do is they have a long-term care pharmacy that prescribes drugs a month at a time to patients in nursing homes in a given area. So that you may have one long-term pharmacy that serves hundreds of nursing homes. They prescribe the drugs 1 month at a time on a little cardboard card. It's like filled with those little plastic bubbles with the pills in them.
Yes.
So they have 31 little plastic bubbles with pills in it, so one for each day of the month. And if the patient has the drug discontinued for some reason, then those drugs just become waste. Whatever pills they didn't take of that 31-day supply just get thrown away. So they may be discontinued because the patient died, or maybe the patient just gets discharged, they go home, or maybe the drug doesn't agree with them for some reason. So in most states, those drugs just get taken. And I talked to one nurse who said she spent about 1 8-hour shift every month sitting with another nurse in front of a toilet, popping pills out of blister packs and flushing them down the toilet. And what's outrageous about that is that we all have been told as consumers not to flush our prescription drugs down the toilet.
It's not good for the environment.
It's bad for the environment. It contaminates the water supply, or there's risk of that happening. And yet, in nursing homes across the country, this is a regular occurrence.
Well, there has to be a better way. And I guess that's the other theme of this hour. And we'll be welcoming phone calls. ProPublica is investigating the types of waste in healthcare that frequently are overlooked. And hopefully, as a result of this big examination, it will not be overlooked. Marshall talked about this tab that you can go to, because we've been trying to do some investigation of our own this morning, but we haven't had a chance to hear back from various places that we've contacted to see what's going on in the state of Wisconsin. We will update what's happening here as soon as we know and invite you to go to our Facebook page for that information. But Marshall is also looking for examples and has been getting tips all over the country to really look at this. I mean, this is a huge amount of money, to say nothing about the human impact of this. People who are not able to get drugs and they're being flushed down the toilet, and that's not good for the environment. And all this equipment that's worth tens of thousands of dollars that other hospitals might be able to use, be it in another part of the state or perhaps overseas. So as much as a quarter of American, this is a big thing, as much as a quarter of American healthcare dollars being wasted. That's the thrust of this article. There are a couple articles. The first installment looked at the equipment and brand new supplies that hospitals throw out, and then the wasteful and potentially harmful ways nursing homes dispose of leftover meds, and how some states, there are bright spots here, like Iowa, have found a solution. We welcome your phone calls, and here's how you reach our conversation this hour. 800-486-8655 is our number, 800-486-8655. Marshall Allen covers patient safety for ProPublica. He's one of the creators of the ProPublica Surgeon Scorecard, and we're delighted to have him. He's the author of the two pieces that we're talking about. This is the Ideas Network. Lots of phone calls coming in for Marshall, and let's start with Kenneth in Janesville. Hi, Kenneth.
Hello. What nobody is talking about is that these drugs or whatever are paid for, in that somebody's going to pay for these things, whether they're thrown away or used. And that's part of the problem. And it's the big part of the problem with the whole system, in that somebody's going to pay for it, you know, without really knowing whether it's used or not.
Marshall.
So, yeah, you're absolutely right about that, Ken. I mean, one of the points about the nursing home story is that these drugs have all been paid for by Medicare. So Medicare has paid for them a month at a time, and then many of them are not used, and so then they just go to waste. And there's not a lot of incentive to save them on the part of the healthcare provider, because they've already been paid by Medicare. So our taxpayer dollars are being flushed down the toilet in a lot of cases. And then the broader point, which I think you're really right about with all this waste, is that these are your dollars and my dollars. These are our taxpayer dollars that are going to fuel all this waste. And then it's also our high insurance premiums that we're paying. It's our higher out-of-pocket costs, which continue to go up year after year. And it's the high deductibles we have. You know, another way they shift the cost onto all of us is by raising our insurance deductibles. And that's just pressure that all of us are feeling in families across the country. And a lot of it is due to this waste.
Thanks, Kenneth, for your call. Gail in on the road. Hi, Gail.
Hi. I am a long-term care administrator. And years ago in the state of Wisconsin, that's exactly what happened. People gathered in the bathroom and flushed pills down the toilet. But your previous caller is right when he said, we are billed for this. Your private insurance is billed for the medication, Medicare and Medicaid. And if the person's medication ends or they expire or they get transferred, that goes back to the pharmacy and they are credited. Two reasons for that. One is they've already been billed, so they can't go out into the community and get it again. And just if they haven't used it, they get credit for it.
And what happens to it if it goes back to the pharmacy?
Yes, correct.
What happens then? What does the pharmacy do?
I would imagine that they take them out of the bubble pack and reuse them, but I know that the people get credit for it.
Mm-hmm. So the credit situation, that's a really good comment. The credit situation just varies a lot depending on the payer and depending on the location. But for a lot of the Medicare drugs, they don't get credit for them. So it really depends on where they are in the country and who the payer is.
And then what happens, do you know, Marshall, when they go to the pharmacy, you've got all these pills that weren't used. Can any of them be reused?
So if they get credit for them, they've stayed in the sterile packaging, and so they can reuse them. But I talked to a lot of people in long-term care pharmacies, and they said, you know, it's a lot of labor to take them out of all the blister packs and put them back into the system.
Uh-huh.
And so they've already been paid for them, so there's not a lot of incentive to get the credit and do the labor to do that work. Now, we didn't talk a lot about Iowa. Iowa's one
right.
state of a few that really has a really kind of smart solution to this. It does take a little investment. So they have invested about $600,000 of state funds, and they've created a nonprofit organization that collects these blister packs from the long-term care pharmacies. They have them inspected by a pharmacist to make sure they haven't been tampered with, and then they have them redispensed to uninsured patients for free.
Mm.
And last year, or this year, they expect to save about $5 million worth of drugs, and that also saves the cost that the patient would pay to buy a new prescription drug. And it also keeps the patients compliant with their medications, which keeps them healthier and keeps them out of the hospital. So they've seen a large return on their investment in Iowa.
Mm. And people who are uninsured maybe can stay alive.
Absolutely, absolutely. And about 39 states have laws that allow this type of redistribution, but not that many states have invested in setting up an actual program to facilitate it, because it is a lot of work to do this redistribution effectively.
Karen on Facebook writes this, Marshall, I'm a pharmacist. Years ago, local pharmacies would provide nursing homes with a one-week supply of medications for each patient. Each dose was individually wrapped and labeled. The nursing homes didn't want to pay the prices that were charged locally, so they moved to these national pharmacies who do a month at a time.
Hmm, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know a lot about that. When I talked to most people, they said the industry standard is to do it a month at a time, but that's not happening in all cases. You know, technology is also starting to solve this problem a little bit. There are some different types of technology where they can put almost like vending machines in the nursing homes
mm-hmm.
with the drugs in them, and then that also reduces the waste because they can prescribe for a day at a time instead of a month at a time.
Mm-hmm. I want to go back to some of these big items that are being discarded. They're getting new machines all the time. We hear that hospitals keep getting, you know, it's why we're thought of as this great healthcare system. You have the best of everything. So something that might be second best that's still really good. Is any of that being sent overseas, just a fraction of it? Because you think about all this equipment that could be so important to people, and some of it just getting put in landfills, I guess.
Well, so the equipment is being sent overseas.
It is.
Yeah, most of the used equipment, well, I don't know about most of it, but when I was at the Partner for World Health warehouse, they had a lot of used medical equipment that they were sending overseas.
Gail, thanks very much for your call, and Karen, thanks so much for your message. Let's go next to Brian in Waukesha. Hi, Brian.
Hi. Hey, I was listening to the conversation, and the one quarter of all money spent being wasted seems huge. It must have been 30 years ago when I was knocking on doors for national health insurance. The idea was a nonprofit pool of money where, you know, everybody threw a dime in the pot and there was a buck there if you needed it. That was the simple way that we brought it to people. We had seniors eating literally dog food because they could only afford their rent and their premiums and their medications. I just think the misnomer that we have today is, I think that quarter of all money spent on healthcare, I think that's dwarfed by the amount of profit taken by the insurance companies. And I don't think healthcare and health insurance are the same thing at all. I think local co-ops with some of this equipment, it would not take a lot of equipment to take care of the healthcare needs of a local population from one to another, county by county. It's just the insurance companies are taking such a huge bite under the guise of what? Stabilize? I don't even know what their excuse is, but to me it seems like a horrible, horrible scam.
Marshall?
Well, there are a lot of companies and organizations that have their hand in the profit. You know, it's insurance companies, it's hospitals, it's doctors, it's even when you look at this waste, you know, there are reverse distributors that go to hospitals and pick up things like expired drugs. That's a whole industry unto itself that's just based on the waste in healthcare. And that is pushing everyone to the breaking point. You know, I mean, you had mentioned that we're all worried about 18% of our gross domestic product is now spent on health care, and it's projected to rise to 20% in the next few years. So we're spending almost one out of every $5 in our economy on health care. And about 25% of that, they estimate, is wasted. And what's happening is it's bringing us to the breaking point, right, where people like this caller who just said are starting to think about, okay, what can I do? You know, maybe in our own local community we can band together and provide things for ourselves. You know, it is causing people to think that they need to have a change because what's happening now is not sustainable.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's amazing to me, Marshall, is that here we are concerned about, and you cite polls that show how many Americans are concerned, rightfully so, about the cost of health care, and yet nobody is looking at this issue. You would think that there would be congressional hearings on this. That's a huge amount of money to be wasted, and there must be some kind of national solution, but nobody's deliberated what that solution ought to be.
Well, as the caller pointed out, what we look at is waste, other people look at is profit. And there are a lot of companies making a lot of money, and they have a lot of influence over what happens with our legislators. And so our elected officials, could be much more aggressive in finding solutions to these problems, but they're largely funded by the industry, the healthcare industry, and others that have put them into positions of influence.
Thanks, Brian, very much for the call. Mike in Southwest Wisconsin. Hello, Mike. Hello, Mike. I don't know where you are. Call us back. Jeff in Madison. Hi, Jeff.
Yes, hello. One quick anecdote and then just a comment. My brother-in-law was in the Navy for a number of years and into the late 90s on a large ship at sea, and every time medical equipment was choppered in, which was, I guess, with some regularity, the medical unit on the ship, which was rather large, would just throw all their used stuff into the sea, or sometimes the new stuff would just be thrown into the sea because they didn't have a place for it. And this happened with regularity. So I encourage your guest and ProPublica maybe to even widen their search. At least he's looking at stuff that has a chance of being recycled. The other thing is I just don't believe anything in this tragedy will ever change until we all know who's paying for it, and the only way to do that is a single-payer system in which we're all taxed, and then people have an interest in it. This way, it's other people's money. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Jeff. Thanks. Who is paying for it? Marshall?
Well, all of us are, but as he points out, it's really difficult to kind of quantify it, and it's difficult to track it when you have so many different payers with so many different plans, and a lot of the information is proprietary. So we don't really, it's very difficult to track these things. And it's, I think, a lot of times intentionally muddy and cloudy to try and get to the bottom of where all the money goes. And so it is really difficult with the system we have to track this stuff. And his anecdote is amazing, you know.
Right.
I would say it sounds too outrageous, except, it was so outrageous to me to find out that nurses in nursing homes are just sitting there spending entire shifts flushing drugs down the toilet. That really surprised me because, that's just, we all know that that's not the right thing to do. But I would not be surprised. I will look into that, but it's really an interesting tip.
Thanks, Jeff, for your call. Now we have Mike from Southwest Wisconsin. Hi. Mike, are you there? I don't know what your problem is. I'm sorry,
Mike.
Mike
can't get through.
I know. I don't know what his problem is. I'm sorry, Mike. You've tried twice, but the third time is charm. So try again. I don't know why your phone's not going through. We have lines open if you'd like to join the conversation. We're talking about remarkable reporting that's been done by our guest, Marshall Allen, who covers patient safety for ProPublica. He's written two, and I'm sure this will be an ongoing series, articles that looked at the amount of waste, what hospitals waste, and also what nursing homes waste with drugs, prescription drugs that, as you know, in many cases are very, very expensive. Hospitals wasting a great deal as well. And if you're just tuning us in, it could be up to a quarter of what we spend in America on health care. That's a whole lot of money. So we're looking at why this is going on and welcoming your phone calls, 800-486-8255. 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. It's interesting that you mostly mention Iowa, a few other places, but it doesn't seem these innovative programs are to be found in a whole lot of places in the country, Marshall.
Well, they aren't. 39 states have passed laws that allow redistribution. So that means in 11 states, there's not even a law that allows it. But in most of these 39 states, they've never invested in a program that will actually solve the problem. And so they've passed a law that allows it, but they haven't invested in a solution. Some of the other states that do well with this are Oklahoma, they say has a good program. Wisconsin has a good program. About a dozen more states have programs where they allow the redistribution of cancer drugs. And then there's a nonprofit tech company out in California called Serum, S-I-R-U-M, and they call themselves the Match.com for drug redistribution, where they allow a charity pharmacy to get connected with a nursing home that has drugs to donate. And then in these states where it's allowed, they can get connected through the Serum kind of software program and get connected that way. So that's beginning in some states like California and Colorado use the Serum program.
Let's go to, dare I say this, Mike in Southwest Wisconsin. Mike, are you there?
Stranger things have happened.
There
right?
We go. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Mike.
Good afternoon. I have some answers to some things that maybe you didn't know the answer to or weren't too clear. I'm doing research right now on recycling drugs. And what we need in Wisconsin, we did have, I think years ago, we had some kind of a program. I called the governor's office. I called our state representative and the Senate. Well, anyways, I think we should have a program. This is just one of my things I want to tell you about, a program in the state where you can take this. There's a lot to this. People can turn these drugs in, for example, to a police department. Now, La Crosse has that. And up there, what they do, they have a, the dump has a special incinerator, and everything gets burnt.
Mm-hmm.
You do not want to flush it down the toilet, because I'll tell you why. Most sewage disposal plants, after the digester gets done with the sewage, it's 98-99% pure water that goes dumps back in the river. However, drugs that used for depression, such as citalopram, that one, and there's a whole host of different ones.
Right.
Those are bad. They don't break down. So then the fish are in the water.
Mm-hmm.
People go fishing, and guess what? I think the DNR did some study work in one state, and they said these fish that were subjected to these drugs in the water, they were acting strange and everything else.
Mm-hmm. You write about that in the article, Marshall. What's happened to fish?
I did mention that. Yeah, it's a similar problem around the country. I went to Long Island in New York, where the Department of Environmental Conservation has an annual program where they go to nursing homes and they pick up these drugs so that they can protect the water supply there. Most of the take-back programs, like Mike is talking about, are focused on consumers. And so around mm-hmm. the country, you do see these big national take-back days and public service announcements telling consumers to come donate your drugs that you're not using or that are expired. But actually, not a lot of them are focused on nursing homes or on medical facilities. So that's why you end up with a lot of this excess waste in the nursing homes.
Is it fair to ask why the makers of the drugs are not responsible for their disposal?
Well, you know, that is a point that the Product Stewardship Institute makes. They're a nonprofit organization that looks at the responsibility of manufacturers. And their point was, looking at pharmaceuticals, they said that it should be compared to, like, paint. They said, in lots of places they've passed laws where the manufacturer of the paint is also responsible for the safe disposal of the paint.
Mm-hmm.
So in the Product Stewardship Institute's opinion, it's the drug manufacturers that should bear responsibility for the safe disposal of their waste.
Mike talked about incineration in La Crosse. Is that happening at many other places?
Yes. I mean, incineration is a pretty amazing thing. I mean, you have all this waste and you have to get rid of it somehow. And there's not sort of an ideal way to do this. But I went out and visited the largest medical waste incinerator in the country. It's called Curtis Bay Medical Waste out in Baltimore. And they do say, as Mike said, that of the ways of disposing of pharmaceuticals, incinerating them is the best environmentally, because flushing them is not a great option for the reasons that Mike mentioned as far as contaminating the water. And also putting them in landfills can lead to leaching into the soil, which can also get into the water supply. So the amazing thing in this Curtis Bay facility is they have this conveyor belt. You know, it's hundreds of feet long, and it snakes its way through the facility from the loading dock basically to these massive incinerators. And these massive incinerators, it's like a giant potbelly stove that someone might have in their living room. And it's fueled by the medical waste. A lot of it is pharmaceuticals that could be otherwise used but are left over from medical facilities. And box after box is just rolling down the conveyor belt, dropping into the fires of the incinerator.
Mm. Thanks so much, Mike, for your call. Let's go to Meg next in Elkhorn. And hello to you, Meg.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi.
I am actually a pharmacy technician for a retail pharmacy, and I have been for the past 10 years. And I found it, one of the things that I come across is when people are hospitalized, that their medications are actually kept, whether they are admitted with their medications or whether they're dispensed at the facility. We run into several instances insurance-wise, mostly is where we run into the problem, where the medication's been dispensed while they were hospitalized or, in a facility, and then they're kept.
Yes.
And the patient isn't dispensed with it, which, I mean, seems to, you know, if the facility isn't reusing them, then it's definitely wasteful. And then the other thing that I just wanted to state was one thing that I see a lot with the elderly is them being able to keep track of their medications and what they're actually supposed to be prescribed. And they end up coming in with tons of different medications that they're either not supposed to be on or they've changed or, and, you know, the family not being able to keep up with that or themselves and not really getting the help that they need. So then there's this huge excess of medication out there that people aren't using and don't know what to do, and it's sitting in their homes and
right.
They're getting billed and paid for.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that's related to that is just the automatic refilling of these prescriptions.
Yes.
So, as you mentioned, you know, a lot of these patients have not had their drugs reviewed in a long time by a pharmacist or by someone who can kind of think critically about what they really need or even how the drugs are interacting with each other. And so doctors will prescribe, and sometimes they'll go to multiple doctors. The multiple doctors will prescribe multiple drugs, and they get on this automatic refill system. And they get drugs sent to their house every 60 days or every 90 days or every 30 days, kind of whether they need them or not, you know, and it's not always what is medically best. So all patients should have their drugs reviewed periodically to make sure that they really need everything that they're being prescribed.
Thank you, Meg, so much for the call. You talk about an interview you did with the program director for health for the Conference of State Legislatures, who said that just passing laws that this can happen, that it's okay to do all of this, it doesn't guarantee success, that there's a need for, and I wonder if any states do this, a state agency. Are there state agencies that oversee programs to get some of these drugs so they can be used by others, to get some of this hospital waste?
Well, again, I think that the Iowa program is the best example of this, and I think that's what this gentleman from the Conference of State Legislators was talking about. He's tracked these laws in the 39 states that have passed them, and he's seen why some of them succeed and some of them do not. And, you know, in Iowa, they passed the law, but they invested in the solution.
I see.
So, you know, they put about $600,000 a year toward this program, which may seem like a lot, but the return on the investment is many times that. Again, like this year, they're estimated to save about $5 million in drugs. And it is a lot of work, you know. And
sure.
He pointed out it's a lot of expense, it's a lot of work, it's a lot of labor. You have to make sure that the drugs are safe. I mean, first and foremost, you would never want to reuse a drug that has been somehow tampered with or somehow compromised.
Yes.
So you have to have trained pharmacists and pharmacy technicians to look at these things.
We'll take more phone calls momentarily. Our guest this hour is Marshall Allen, covers patient safety for ProPublica, has written two very important articles on hospital waste and also on drug waste from nursing homes all over the country. Our number is 800-486-8655. This is the Ideas Network. All right, let's go back to phone calls. And our next caller is Joanne in Woodstock. Hi.
Hi. And thanks for doing this subject because I'm boiling. My husband's in the nursing home. They have those doctors that walk the halls. You never get a report. They never tell the family member that's responsible or looking out for their spouse or family member. Anything that they're doing, and then the next thing you know, there's another drug, another drug, another drug. And it's really weird when your guest said, Medicare pays. Most of us are supplement, of which we're paying premiums every month, and you know what the premiums are.
Right.
Anyway, so we have no say. And the doctor that's the resident doctor, which you never meet, I've never seen the one in 4 months that's supposedly writing prescriptions for my husband. And then if they give him a drug once a week, you know, give him a prescription for 7 days, then there's a handling fee. So then 4 times a month you pay $5 for that one prescription extra because they're just dispensing it to the nursing home 1 week at a time.
Oh.
There's so many angles,
right.
And it's so bad. And then you have to go out of the central area and get a physician that'll help you by going through and looking at what they're giving him or your dependent. And it's just a racket. And the other thing that's interesting, the bill comes, the one I'm getting now, is coming from Baltimore, Maryland. But when I send the check, I'm supposed to send it to Texas. And the name is for the pharmacy is one I've never heard of, never seen it in any literature.
Hmm.
And so who knows where they're really coming from.
Hmm.
But that's all I've got to say. It's the biggest racket. And then when he gets done with this study, or maybe he knows someone that he could stick on the study about the food that's being served to these people. And I'm looking out for all of them, not just my husband.
Thank you, Joanne, for your call. Marshall.
Yeah, Kathleen, I mean, you know, what you're hearing there, you know, is a lot of frustration,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes.
And people are kind of at a breaking point, I think, with the disconnection in the care they get. I mean, you know, she feels like she can't even hear from her doctor. And a lot of times, you know, doctors in nursing homes, they may cover multiple nursing homes. And so it's very difficult for them to have the time to talk to a lot of patients, but patients and their families need to be informed about the care that they're getting, right? And then you see they're prescribing all these drugs, and he or she doesn't even know why her husband is getting all these drugs. Then you get into the payment, you know, you're getting all these fees attached to everything that you do, and then you're getting it from some nameless corporation somewhere in America. People can't tell what is going on, whether it comes to the direct care at the bedside or, you know, heaven forbid, you need to figure out how to pay for all these things, right?
Yes.
And so it's a system that is really convoluted and very confusing. But at the end of the day, it's the patient and it's the little guy who gets the bad care and then also gets the big bills. And so everything really trickles down to the patient level. And that's why I feel like, you know, in a lot of ways, we really are at a breaking point. And it'll be interesting to see what happens in the coming years, because patients are going to start rising up more and more and voicing that frustration.
Yeah. Oh, Joanne, it's hard to hear. It's hard to hear such agony in her voice, and I'm sure she speaks for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Will, Madison, hi.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to comment on kind of the culture of safety in medicine. I think as far as so medication aside, but just talking about whether it's medical supplies or medical devices, in medicine, the idea is cognitively, if a thing of normal saline, salt water shouldn't expire, and if a stapler gets put onto the sterile field, no one's touched it, so there's no reason it should be contaminated. But then there's the idea of avoiding risk whenever possible. I mm-hmm. think you think, if this is my patient, do I want to take that really small risk, even though I can think through it and there really shouldn't be much of a risk? So I think it's on the people who want to use maybe the second-class products to prove that they're the same. And I think, Kathleen, you also commented, is there something that's almost as good but still quite good? And I don't know if patients or physicians are willing to take that chance on themselves or their patients.
Marshall.
Well, yeah, Will is making an interesting point.
Yes.
I mean, at least with the drugs that are getting thrown away in nursing homes, these are not second best. I mean, these are brand new, unexpired, in a sterile package, coming from a pharmacy, in the hands of healthcare providers, not patients. So these are not second best. I mean, these are 100% just as good as they were when they were originally prescribed. So those ones are just being thrown away to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars a year. Now, his other point is really valid. I mean, in a way, we're victims of our own high standards, right? We have very high standards here in the United States. And, for instance, say an exam table. You know, there. I talk to some people about what hospitals waste, and if there's an exam table that has a small tear in it, it might not pass the infection standards of a hospital, and so the hospital might choose to throw it away and get a new one. Now, in a lot of cases, people might repair that table, or people might go ahead and use it even though it has a small tear in it. But if we're going to have the highest infection standards, those things, maybe out of an abundance of caution, might get thrown away. With the example of the sterile field in surgery, what their solution was there was to reduce the number of instruments that they introduced into the sterile field, and they did reduce a lot of their waste by doing that. So things can also be done in a better way.
Thank you, Will, so much for your call. Meg in Montello is next. Hello, Meg.
Hi there.
Hi.
I'm calling. My concern is something I used to work with, a community coalition on drug abuse prevention. And one of the concerns with that group and groups really nationwide is the prescribing practices and how, say, for example, I go in for a minor procedure and I am given just a giant bottle full of painkillers, of which I might take one or two. I feel like, you know, we need to start doing something about the way things are prescribed, the number of pills that people are prescribed, if we're going to, you know, make a difference in how much is thrown away and put into our water systems and things like that.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And there has been some decrease overall in the amount of prescription narcotics prescribed every year in this country. But the one of the biggest problems in healthcare, whether it's quality or cost, is the variation. There are some providers who are really responsible in the way they prescribe something like narcotics, and so they'll prescribe a small amount at a time, maybe just enough that the patient needs to recover from a recent operation or something like that. And then there are other providers who will give them a 90-day supply or a month supply with multiple refills of some prescription narcotic with way more pills than
right.
they ever need, which can then lead to abuse. So there's real variation, and a lot of it is that there's just not accountability. There aren't standards that are set, and so people can kind of do as they please.
Thank you so much, Meg, for your call. Well, Marshall, thank you so much for writing these articles, and there are many more to come. I'm sure they're so important.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate your interest, and all the callers had really interesting things to say and insights to add. And again, I would just ask that people help me investigate these wasted healthcare dollars. You know, you can go to the website and look at the stories and click on the link there, and you can share tips with me. I really appreciate that.
All right, so they should go to ProPublica.org. Okay.
And then the two stories are called What Hospitals Waste and America's Other Drug Problem. And then you can see the link. It says, help us investigate wasted healthcare dollars.
Great. What valuable work you do. Thank you, Marshall.
Thank you, Kathleen.
Marshall Allen covers patient safety for ProPublica. Again, if you missed that, it's ProPublica.org. And you can read both of these articles. They're very important, and help them out, because there are questions you may have or tips you may be able to give Marshall and the other hardworking reporters at ProPublica. Thanks to Chris Molina for producing this hour. Thanks to help from Gretchen Brown on the hour, and thanks to Lisa Nalbandian for on-air production for this hour here in Milwaukee. For all of your calls and for your interest, thank you very much. A reminder that we talk about healthcare hour one of our program on Tuesday.